Chapter 52 Harry woke to the sound of whispering voices. Not that he could make any sense out of them. He winced as he cracked his eyes open. Harry? Oh, thank Merlin! Remus breathed.
What happened this time? Harry muttered.
Dead silence greeted his question. Harry opened his eyes a little more. Remus? He questioned. Remus's eyes drifted to Harry's forehead as he gently brushed strands of hair away from Harry's eyes. Harry winced. Even the light touch sent waves of pain coursing through his head. Drink this, Madame Pomfrey ordered, coming into Harry's limited view. Harry obeyed without question. Close your eyes and rest a few minutes until it starts working, she commanded. Harry thought about nodding, but decided against it.
Yes, ma'am, he murmured.
He lay there quietly, wondering at the silence in the room. He tried to remember what the hell had happened that had left him injured and in bed again. As the memories came rushing back, he jerked into an upright position. His hands flew up to cradle his head as the pain flared, threatening to shatter his skull. "Mr. Potter, you need to lie down and rest," Pomfrey said insistently. Harry blinked blearily at the woman.
"Madame Pomfrey?"
he questioned in disbelief, finally registering her presence and realizing belatedly that he was in the hospital wing at Hogwarts, not home at Grimmauld Place. "Yes, now lie down, young man," she ordered. Squinting against the pain still throbbing in his head, Harry lay down, but glanced at Remus beside him.
"You all right?" he asked. "Where's Draco? Where's Severus? What happened to Voldemort?"
Remus gave him a small, worried smile.
"I'm fine, Harry. You're the one who needs to let Madame Pomfrey take care of you,"
he said softly.
"You did it, Harry. Voldemort is gone. For good."
Harry was confused, and he realized that he'd likely been given some dreamless sleep, as he could barely keep his eyes open.
"Where's Draco and Severus?" he asked desperately. "Where's everyone?"
"They're fine," Remus reassured, but the worry hadn't left his features, and Harry wasn't actually reassured.
"When you killed Voldemort, you broke the connections he had with yourself and his followers," Remus continued. "That's why you and Draco collapsed."
Harry's mind was fuzzy and his eyes were drifting shut.
"But Draco's all right?" he questioned.
"Yes, Draco has already recovered," Remus answered. "There were many injuries, but everyone has survived the battle. You are the only one yet to fully recover."
"Figures," Harry murmured, but he was relieved to hear that everyone was all right.
The relief and the potions took over, and he was pulled into slumber before he could demand more answers. Harry groaned, his head pounding him into consciousness.
"Harry? Don't shout," he muttered hoarsely, his throat dry.
There was a murmur of voices that rasped over his nerves, a rapid click of heels across the floor, a vial pressed against his lips. He swallowed automatically, coughing a little at trying to drink while still lying down. Silence. As the pounding gradually diminished, he slowly cracked his eyes open. Madame Pomfrey, Ron, and Hermione let out a collective exhale in relief.
"Oh, Harry, I'm so glad you're all right," Hermione said.
She was bouncing on her toes and appeared to be restraining from launching herself at him. Feeling rather fragile, Harry appreciated her efforts, though he was extremely glad to see her and Ron.
"Are you two all right?" he whispered.
They nodded, offering him smiles.
"Where's Draco?" he asked.
Their expressions of relief and happiness at seeing him awake turned instantly to worry.
"Sit up, Mr. Potter,"
Pomfrey said briskly. She'd allowed the trio a minute, but that was clearly all the time she was willing to wait. "You may have some water to ease your throat." Alarm flared. He sat up, wincing.
"Where's Draco?" he repeated.
Hermione pressed a goblet of water in his hand as Pomfrey ran her customary scans over his body. Both of them ignored his question. Feeling a little dizzy at the upright position, he drank down the cold water. He squinted at them, knowing he wouldn't get any answers until Pomfrey had finished. His brain worked fuzzily,
trying to figure out where Draco could possibly be. He vaguely remembered waking and seeing Remus. Working backwards, he remembered the battle anew.
"Where's Draco?"
he demanded fiercely. The last thing he could remember from the battle was Draco's screaming echoing in his ears, simply adding to the skull-splitting quality of the moment. He could now also remember Remus telling him that everyone was all right. But where were they? Had Remus been lying?
Ron and Hermione looked to Madame Pomfrey questioningly. She sighed in resignation.
"His head will continue to ache due to the separation. There is nothing I can do for that," she said. "However, he will survive the trip. I will go inform the others he's awake." She turned and disappeared into her office.
"Separation?" Harry asked blankly.
"Never mind," he said dismissively.
"Where's Draco? What trip? Where is he?"
Ron and Hermione were obviously all right, and he was happy and relieved to see them, but he was beginning to get seriously pissed off as his panic grew. Why wouldn't anyone tell him where Draco was?
"Just give us 15 minutes to explain before you go tearing off," Hermione pleaded.
"He's being held at the Ministry for trial, along with the others," Ron blurted out.
"What?"
Harry shouted, instantly regretting it. He clutched at his head with both hands, hoping he could simply hold it in place. With his eyes squeezed shut, he heard rather than saw Hermione smacking Ron.
"He wants to know," Ron defended in a low voice. "You knew he would.
You didn't have to tell him like that," Hermione hissed. As soon as he was sure it would hurt them more than it would hurt him, he vowed to smack both of his friends.
"Hermione, shut up," Harry ground out. "Ron, explain."
Ron would give him the information a lot faster than Hermione. He knew he was being an arse, but he was hurting and he just wanted someone to tell him what the hell was going on.
"You killed you-know-who," Ron said quickly.
"When he died, the magical links were snapped. All the Death Eaters fell, but so did you. They were all unconscious for at least a day, some for two, like Snape, and taken into custody. You've been out for 4 days, because your link with you-know-who was so much stronger. That's what Hermione thinks, anyway."
He sucked in another breath.
"Shacklebolt had to take the Malfoys and Snape into custody, but he's watching over them personally in the holding cells, and they're just waiting for you. They're ready for trial as soon as you wake up proper. Shacklebolt says it's mostly formality, but it has to be done before they can be released. And for that to happen, they need you to testify."
Harry sent Draco a message through his bracelet, grateful no one had taken it off his wrist.
"Draco, are you all right?"
"Harry, you're awake!"
"Yeah, are you all right?"
"I'm fine, Pratt. It's you that's hurt."
"Severus, Lucius, Narcissa?"
"Fine, fine, fine."
"I'll be there soon."
"Are you all right?"
"Headache. Otherwise, fine."
"Stay. Rest."
"No. Miss you."
"Been missing you for days."
"I'll be there soon." After Harry repeated his earlier message, Draco took a little longer before responding again.
"Stay safe."
Harry frowned at the bracelet, wondering what Draco meant. He shoved the duvet back.
"Harry, you can't!" Hermione cried softly.
"The hell I can't!" Harry growled.
"What she means is that the whole world is crazy out there," Ron said quickly. "You'll be mauled before you get 10 steps.
Harry paused, squinting at them in confusion.
"We can solve that," said Fred with a flourish,
as he pulled off the cloak, George appearing beside him.
"Been looking everywhere for that," Ron muttered, glowering at his brothers.
"You had Harry's other one," George said dismissively.
"Lupin has it,"
Ron denied.
George shrugged. "Just protecting Harry's investments," he said. "Thought he might need a hand breaking free from the hospital wing."
"How long have you been here?" Hermione asked, her brow furrowed.
"Long enough," Fred answered.
Harry decided to simply ignore them and stood, blinking furiously as the hospital wing tilted dangerously. Fred casually rested a hand on his shoulder, gently pushing him to sit back down.
"Why don't you let us help you get dressed?" George suggested easily.
"We've had practice and all," Fred added cheekily. Harry felt too ill to argue with them. He sent a weak glare, but didn't protest as they began stripping him out of his hospital-issue pajamas. Hermione squeaked and turned her back on them, as George pulled off the bottoms without fanfare. Ron took a step back, staring at his brothers warily.
"What the hell is wrong with me?" Harry asked, thinking it was too much effort to be embarrassed. He was rather disturbingly used to Draco helping him lately, and couldn't be arsed to care about George helping him step into clean boxers and trousers. He felt dizzy and weak and far too uncoordinated to dress himself. Not a good sign.
"The party!" Ron exclaimed loudly. "That's where they dressed you!"
Harry winced painfully.
"Can we say unimportant right now?" Fred asked pleasantly, helping Harry shrug into a new shirt.
"Sorry," Ron muttered.
"Hermione?" Harry pleaded. He'd even take the long-winded answers now, if only anything would start making sense.
Hermione turned back around, keeping her eyes firmly above Harry's waist, despite the fact that he was technically decent again.
"Harry, it's your scar. It's gone," she said.
His hand flew to his forehead. Fred had been about to button the cuff of the sleeve and was left holding the button as it tore away from the fabric. Hermione conjured a small mirror, holding it up in front of him. He held his fringe up with his left hand, and with the fingertips of his right, he gently brushed over the smooth skin of his forehead.
"It was a curse scar, not a normal one," Hermione said softly. "McGonagall told me that she'd asked Dumbledore to remove it when you were a baby, but he said it would be useful. And it was. Painful for you, but useful."
"You thought it would disappear if Voldemort died," Harry said absently, still staring at his forehead.
"But I didn't really believe it would happen."
He tore his eyes from the mirror to look at her.
"Voldemort's really gone then," he said in realization.
Hermione nodded, swallowing heavily.
"Yes, Harry," she said, her voice a little unsteady. "You did it. He's gone. But it was an extreme shock to your body when the connection was broken."
She pulled his arm down and took the button from Fred, spelling it back onto the shirt with a murmured spell. Her voice sounded steadier when she spoke again.
"Harry, do you remember fourth year?" she asked.
Harry stared at her blankly. He listened with growing understanding as she reminded him about Snape and Karkaroff's dark marks, gradually becoming clearer as Voldemort started regaining his strength.
"So, see, it had disappeared along with Voldemort the last time, but it was technically still there. It was simply dormant," she explained.
"This time the connection was actually broken completely," he said slowly.
"Yes," Hermione said, her tone grateful that Harry was starting to understand. "Harry, you did it. Voldemort's truly gone this time. I've asked, and Snape admitted that the dark mark slowly faded last time, just as it slowly became clearer. This time, it was essentially obliterated as soon as Voldemort died."
She rubbed her hands down her face.
"Harry, no one has known why exactly you've been unconscious for the past few days. Those with the dark mark have recovered much faster than you. They've expected that it's had something to do with your connection to Voldemort, but they've not been aware of how deeply you were connected to him," she said, her tone lilting it into a faint question.
Harry shook his head slowly. "They've known about the connection, obviously, but I haven't told them about how it happened," he said.
Harry, Hermione, and Ron glanced warily at Fred and George. They pretended to zip their lips.
Harry, she said his name hesitantly, evidently deciding to ignore Fred and George.
Just tell me, Hermione, Harry said, growing impatient. He knew she was holding back something.
Hermione closed her eyes tightly for a few moments before abruptly reaching to Harry's rucksack, which was resting on the floor.
Here, I'm not sticking my hand in there, she said, passing it to him.
What's in there? He asked warily.
She shuddered visibly.
One of your snakes, she admitted.
Harry arched his brows in surprise, but stuffed his hand into his rucksack. He smiled when he saw Lyssa.
Is Sal safe as well? He asked.
Ron shot a disgusted look at his brothers.
Yes, these two rescued your bloody snakes, he said.
Madame Pomfrey wasn't thrilled with the idea of trying to treat you with snakes attached, Hermione added. Harry grinned at the twins, beaming at him in return.
So, is Lyssa all right?
Hermione asked nervously.
She looks all right, Harry said,
wondering why Hermione was acting so oddly.
Why don't you ask her? Hermione suggested.
Harry glanced at Ron questioningly, hoping he had some explanation for Hermione's behavior.
Just talk to your bloody snake, Ron said.
Lyssa really did look fine, but Harry asked her anyway.
Have you been treated all right while I've been gone?
He hissed.
Yes, master, Lyssa said. Although I have not been playing with the little one.
Harry shook his head, smiling ruefully.
You've not missed me, but you've missed Victoria, he said. I enjoy playing with her, but you are the only one who will allow it, Lyssa hissed. Well, I'm glad you're all right, anyway, Harry said. Hopefully we'll see Victoria soon, as I miss her too.
He glanced back up at Hermione, and was surprised to see the relief on her features. She cast another wary glance at the twins, but again dismissed them as she spoke to Harry.
I wasn't sure if you would still be able to speak Parseltongue, Hermione explained.
Oh, Harry said, blinking in astonishment. The possibility that he wouldn't be able to had never occurred to him.
You seem happy that I still can.
Happy is a rather strong word, she said, eyeing Lyssa, who was now curled around Harry's neck.
She shook her head, dismissing the snake.
I was worried when you weren't waking up like the others, she said. Malfoy regained consciousness about 24 hours after the battle. Snape took about twice as long, but he's also fine. You finally woke up on the third day, but Remus said you were in an extreme amount of pain.
She eyed him critically.
You still are, she said.
My head doesn't feel like it's going to explode now, he muttered.
Ron snorted. There's a rousing endorsement for your state of health, he said.
Best I can offer, Harry said, shrugging. Whatever Pomfrey gave me, it at least took the edge off.
He remembered her comment. So, separation. She meant that I'm, what, suffering from separation from Voldemort?
Yes, Hermione answered. She can't do much else for you, because this is a rather unique situation.
Big surprise, Harry muttered.
She ignored him, continuing with her explanation.
Harry, Voldemort was a part of you since you were 15 months old, she said gently. You didn't know it for a very long time, but he was there regardless. You weren't carrying around a part of his soul.
She paused, and they both shuddered.
But, Harry, you did have a piece of Voldemort in you, some of his magic.
But I still have it, he said. I can still speak Parseltongue, at least.
She nodded in agreement.
Yes, but I wasn't sure if you would be able to or not. When he died, it was always possible that every bit of his magic would die with him.
Harry stared at her in alarm. He can't come back, can he?
No, no he can't, Hermione said quickly. Your scar is gone, Harry. That means he is gone. Permanently.
You're positive? He asked.
Yes, I'm certain, she said. We're talking about magic, not a soul.
All right, Harry said, trying to calm his racing pulse.
So, what does this all mean? He was tired of going in circles.
I think it actually means that you'll be all right, she said, exhaling a shaky breath. You should be as good as new in a few days, without a loss of magic. I think it's just taking you longer to recover because your body, mind, and magic are having to adjust to the sudden absence of Voldemort's presence. You were more closely connected to him than anyone else. The Death Eaters simply carried Voldemort's mark on their arm. You, on the other hand... Well, I reckon you could say you carried his mark in your head.
But I'm finally rid of him, he said, turning everything over in his mind, rubbing at the smooth skin of his forehead.
Yes, Harry, Hermione said, giving him a small smile.
Harry looked down at his feet, to see George now shoving them into his trainers.
There's something disturbing about you three, Ron pointed out conversationally.
It's Draco's influence, Harry said absently. He desperately wanted to be with Draco, and he didn't want to have to track him down in a ministry holding cell first. Somehow, he didn't think that would be putting Draco in a pleasant, cuddling kind of mood, which is what he really wanted.
Madame Pomfrey hasn't come back, he noted, glancing up at the office door.
She's being deliberately oblivious, Hermione said. She knows as well as the rest of us that we'll be taking you to the ministry now, even though you should still be resting.
Harry blinked at her.
Oh, he said.
The Shrieking Shack will be best, I think, Ron said. The others nodded in agreement.
Huh?
Harry asked dumbly. Hermione nibbled her lip nervously.
Harry, there are reporters and all kinds of people who want to talk to you. There's tons of people at the gates, and they're camped out all the way to Hogsmeade. Going through the tunnel to the Shrieking Shack is going to be the easiest way to sneak you out of the castle, even with the cloak.
All right, Harry said, deciding he didn't really want to know any more.
He tried standing again, and this time managed to stay on his feet, not feeling too bad.
Let's go then, he said.
Harry was surprised at the number of people at the ministry when they arrived. He was even more surprised as Tonks met them in the atrium. Who exactly had Madame Pomfrey informed that he was awake? He followed her, Ron, and Hermione through the corridors, guided by Fred and George under the cloak. Apparating had not been pleasant, and had sapped what energy he had. By the time they stopped, he was fairly certain they were holding him up rather than guiding him. He could feel the sweat beating on his forehead from the effort it had taken to get this far, and his head was feeling rather fuzzy again. A large door slid open in front of him, and he was dragged through. He blinked dazedly, relieved to see Draco and Severus, Narcissa, and even Lucius. He fumbled to step out of the cloak, but the twins weren't letting go of him.
Harry!
Draco shouted. Harry winced, squeezing his eyes to thin slits.
"Shout at me again and I'm leaving,"
he mumbled. The twins let go of him finally, and he was instantly caught up in Draco's arms.
"Oh, Merlin, Harry, you look a fright,"
Draco murmured.
"But gods, you look so damn good."
"Why did you bring him here?" Severus demanded in a low voice. "It is clear he did not make it here under his own power."
"Would you have tried to stop him?"
Fred asked calmly.
"Or would you have made it easier for him?" George questioned.
His face buried in Draco's neck, Harry could hear Severus muttering something under his breath, before speaking louder.
"Draco, get him on the bed," he ordered.
"Why didn't Pomfrey drug him?" Draco demanded. Ron snorted loudly. "And put up with Harry's fury afterwards? We all knew he'd be pissed off that you lot were here. He just killed off a bloody Dark Lord, and I don't think Madame Pomfrey was willing to risk drugging him with dreamless sleep more than once."
"Harry, you told me you were fine,"
Draco chided gently, simply pulling Harry down to lie on the bed with him, not letting him go. Harry smiled, snuggling closer to Draco.
I'm fine now, he murmured.
Just rest a bit before we get you out of here.
Granger, Severus snapped. How long has he been awake?
Not long, sir, Hermione admitted. He wanted to know where Malfoy was, and wasn't going to be put off about it. He's not overly alert, and Fred and George even had to dress him. Madame Pomfrey said he'll be all right, though. He just needs to rest and adjust to not having that bond with Voldemort any longer. As you saw, his head is still aching fiercely. Here, these are the potions she says to give him.
Harry had buried his face in Draco's neck and was already half asleep again. He could hear, though, the clink of potions vials changing hands.
He didn't ask about anything? Severus asked, and Harry could hear the frown in his voice.
Lupin said he'd already assured Harry that everyone was all right when he woke before, Hermione said. I did manage to explain to him why he's so ill, and he is aware that he killed Voldemort, but that's about it. He didn't care about anything except getting to Malfoy.
She finished with a shrug in her voice.
Merlin, you're stupid, Harry, Draco muttered, holding him a little tighter.
Well, as he's about to be locked in with you four, he won't be able to do much of anything besides rest, Tonks said cheerfully. Yell if you need me.
Harry sat on the edge of the bed, elbows on his knees, fingertips massaging his temples. He was so tired of his head hurting. Draco sat beside him, kneading the muscles in his shoulders. They hadn't been awake long enough to use the loo, down some potions, then sit in silence.
"Where's Lucius and Narcissa?" he asked quietly. "I thought they were here."
"They were visiting," Severus answered dryly. "They are in the next holding cell."
Harry nodded, absently noting that the movement didn't make him want to scream in pain any longer.
"This room reminds me of the Dursleys," he said.
Draco snorted softly. "This room is better," he muttered.
"Except that you can't leave," Harry pointed out.
Draco's hands gripped tighter on his shoulders briefly, but he didn't say anything, resuming his massaging after a couple of seconds.
"How are you feeling, Harry?"
Remus asked mildly in concern. Harry glanced at Remus and Severus, sitting shoulder to shoulder on the bed opposite, resting against the wall. He shrugged half-heartedly, not wanting to dislodge Draco's hands. At least his shoulder had finally healed.
"Considering I've done nothing but sleep for days, I'm tired," he said honestly. "I'm also bloody tired of my head hurting. I know there's probably a million things I should be asking about, but I'm afraid to ask about any of them. I can't even think what the questions should be."
He shook his head wearily. "I'm having trouble even believing that it's over, but maybe that's because it's not really over. I'm frustrated because we're sitting in a bloody holding cell when we should be out celebrating with the rest of the wizarding world."
"Not that I really feel like celebrating," he admitted. "I just want things to be, well, not normal, as nothing is ever normal for me. Calm, though. Calm would be nice. Quiet. Peaceful. I want to go home."
"Harry, you can go home," Severus pointed out.
Harry frowned at him. "No, I can't," he said. "You and Draco are still here."
Draco's arms slid around him, pulling Harry back to rest against his chest.
"If I ever try to accuse you of being selfish, you have the right to punish me however you like," he murmured in Harry's ear.
Harry shivered. "But I am being selfish," he said. "Damn it, I want you home with me. After everything that's happened this summer, you shouldn't have to be sitting in the bloody ministry. Fuck, I hate this place," he muttered.
"Kingsley has had no choice, Harry," said Severus. "It has been necessary for us to be taken into custody, despite the farce that it is. We've been allowed far more freedoms than most of the prisoners," he said, giving Harry and Draco a pointed stare. "Certainly they are not allowed visitors."
Harry simply snuggled deeper into Draco's embrace.
"Well, we've only had to stay here and at least pretend to be obeying the laws,"
Draco muttered bitterly. Harry frowned at his tone. Remus caught his expression and smiled. It was not the easiest task to convince Draco it was best for him to stay here, rather than being with you in the hospital wing at Hogwarts, he explained. He put up quite the fight.
We didn't know if Harry was going to be all right, Draco said sullenly. I should have been there, not sitting in some fucking ministry cell.
If you wish to be with Harry, rather than sitting in an Azkaban cell, then it is necessary for you to follow the procedures, Severus said calmly.
Like you were so calm before, Draco muttered. You were as worried as I was, constantly sending messages to Lupin, demanding to know how Harry was doing.
He is here now, Severus said, conveniently sidestepping Draco's comments. As soon as he is feeling up to testifying, we will face our trials.
Draco stiffened at the word trial.
It must be done, Draco, Severus said in understanding. There is hope.
I'm not letting them take you to Azkaban, Harry said fiercely, a shudder coursing through his body. Not even Lucius.
Severus's lips turned up at the edges, giving Harry a small smile.
Kingsley expects each of us to receive a full pardon, but it does rely on your testimony to simplify things, he said drolly. Very few, if any, would directly go against the Savior's wishes, particularly as the Dark Lord's defeat is so fresh in everyone's minds.
I'm the Savior? Harry asked, grimacing. Draco sniggered, but he pressed a kiss to Harry's temple before speaking.
Yes, Harry, he drawled. You've been promoted.
Promoted?
Harry exclaimed, wincing and regretting his own shout.
Quiet was good.
Severus and Remus eyed him with concern, but didn't comment. Draco clenched his jaw, but ignored it as well.
Yes, you've been promoted, Draco continued. Before, you were everyone's hope. Now you've proven they were right to put their trust in you. You'll have everyone eating out of the palm of your hand, bowing and scraping to the Savior.
Harry twisted in Draco's arms, staring at him in horror.
You're joking, right? He asked hopefully. Draco shook his head, highly amused.
It's actually a good thing, Harry, he drawled. It means you'll get your way with setting 4 evil Death Eaters loose in society again.
Harry frowned in consternation.
You're not evil, he protested. And you should be pardoned, because you deserve it, for all the things you've done, not because I'm the bloody Savior. If you go free because of me, then you'll be subjected to Merlin knows what when I turn into the embodiment of evil again.
Draco stared at him incredulously.
Embodiment of evil? He repeated. You?
I may be the bloody Savior now, but it's not like it's going to stay that way, Harry retorted. Give everyone a few days, and some will be wanting me hauled off to Azkaban because I'm a murderer and a danger to others. Some others will be wanting me sent to St. Mungo's, because surely I must be mad for supporting 4 Death Eaters.
Harry, Remus interjected, you will always have many loyal supporters. Yes, there will be those who are against you, but because of the great things you've done, you will have the support of the masses. You've given everyone the freedom to live again, and they will not take that lightly.
They all looked up as the heavy door opened.
Breakfast,
Tonks said cheerfully. Harry couldn't help but grin. Since when did you turn into a house elf?
Since my favorite hero boy decided to turn himself into a prisoner, she retorted.
She grinned cheekily at Draco.
And, of course, my dearest cousin.
She turned to face Remus and Severus, shaking her head, her hands on her hips after she'd levitated the breakfast trays to the beds.
I do have to wonder if I should leave Remus to rot away here, though, leaving me for the oh-so-charming Snape.
Harry slapped a hand over his mouth, his eyes wide. Draco was sniggering softly in his ear.
I think I see why you like her so much, he whispered.
I gather everyone knows about their relationship now? Harry asked.
Yes, and she's teased Lupin unmercifully about it every time she's come in here when he's around, Draco answered.
She's been smart enough not to attack Severus directly, who's enjoyed watching Lupin squirm just as much as she has. The door had been left wide open, and Kingsley ushered Madame Pomfrey into the room. "More house calls?" Harry asked dryly. Kingsley just smiled.
"You'll be allowed to have your breakfast after she checks you over."
Madame Pomfrey glanced around the overly crowded holding cell in disapproval.
"Do not believe you will be allowed to get away with this when you are attending Hogwarts this year, Mr. Potter," she said sternly. "When you are injured, you will stay in the hospital wing until I believe you are fit to leave."
"How do you know I'll be injured?" Harry protested. He received pointed looks from every single person in the room, and he gave in meekly to Pomfrey's ministrations. When she was finished poking and prodding him, she gave Kingsley a reluctant nod before leaving. Harry watched her go warily.
"What was that about?" he asked. "Against her better judgment, she is stating that you are capable of withstanding trial today," Kingsley said.
Harry blinked at him. "Am I on trial?"
"You might as well be," Draco muttered. "You'll be the one saying more in our defense than anyone else."
"Harry, what do you know of the Ministry's trial procedures?" Kingsley asked.
Harry's brow furrowed as he thought about it.
"Well, I don't think my trial was exactly normal. I'm the only person ever tried by a full court for underage magic," he said. He was staring at the floor and missed the exchanged glances over his head.
"I've seen a few of the Death Eater trials from before, but..."
He looked up at Kingsley in realization. The accused were never brought into the room until all the testimony had already been given. "I'll be there for their entire trial, but they'll only be there for the verdict. They really can't defend themselves."
"How is it that you've witnessed Death Eater trials?" Remus asked.
Harry glanced warily at Severus. "Dumbledore's pensive in fourth year," he admitted. "I think he left it for me to find on purpose."
"And in fifth year," Severus trailed off.
Harry nodded. "It wasn't intentional, but it was there, and Draco called you, and I'm sorry," he said miserably.
"It is done," Severus said.
"You two have more cryptic conversations," Draco said irritably. "I don't reckon either of you will ever tell me how I seem to be involved in this one."
"Actually," Harry frowned as he remembered, "it was when you discovered Montague in the Vanishing Cabinet. You came running to tell Snape. And our illustrious Mr. Potter got himself into a great deal of trouble,"
Severus said dryly.
"Yeah," Harry agreed, sighing. "If he'd stayed out of Severus's pensive, he would have continued taking occlumency lessons, although he knew that he and Severus hadn't been getting anywhere with the lessons anyway. There were simply far too many factors that led to Sirius's death."
"It's not your fault, Harry," Severus said, understanding where Harry's thoughts were taking him.
Harry shrugged. "I know," he admitted sadly. "It's Voldemort's. But we all could have made better choices."
Severus nodded in acknowledgement. Remus was looking at them with a glimmer of suspicion, but the others were staring at them blankly.
"Is there anything to do with Death Eater trials in this conversation?" Tonks asked curiously.
Harry started to shake his head no, but then looked at Severus questioningly.
"Does the Ministry know about Narcissa's involvement?" he asked.
"I do not believe so," Severus said. "Albus never deemed it necessary for the Ministry to know everything," he added dryly.
"So what exactly is she on trial for?" Harry asked.
"Simply for being a Death Eater," Kingsley said. "The Ministry has no other specific crimes they can charge her with."
He nodded at Draco.
"Draco is being charged with being a Death Eater, attempted murder, and leading the Death Eaters into Hogwarts."
"Attempted murder of whom?" Harry asked, wondering if they knew about Katie and Ron.
Kingsley blinked. "Of Dumbledore," he said, staring at him and Draco suspiciously.
"Oh, well, that's good then," Harry said. He spoke up again quickly. "What about Lucius?"
"Lucius is actually rather lucky," Kingsley admitted. "He has already been tried and convicted for his Death Eater status and breaking into the Ministry previously.
The time he has served leaves him with a fairly blank slate. He was still sitting in an Azkaban cell when you-know-who was at his worst. So what exactly is he being charged with? Harry asked. His only new charge is breaking out of Azkaban, Kingsley said, giving Harry a pointed stare. Harry smiled innocently.
I reckon I have to tell them how Scrimjaw released him and faked his death for me, then, won't I?
I believe it is a good thing for you that they will not be subjecting the savior of the wizarding world to Veritaserum, Kingsley said with a wry twist of his mouth. Harry's smile fell.
They won't be giving Veritaserum to anyone, will they? He asked nervously.
No, Severus answered. Veritaserum is rarely used in ministry trials, because it is best used on the unsuspecting or the weak.
Harry knew that, actually. Veritaserum certainly hadn't been administered at any trial he'd ever witnessed. It left him with a bitter taste in his mouth, knowing that if it was used, Sirius would never have been sent to Azkaban. Ministry trials left a great deal to be desired. Everything was simply up to the Wizengamot and the current minister's discretion. A simple hearing of evidence, a majority vote, and the minister's ruling. Harry was disgusted with the entire process, even considering the fact that the system would be working in his favor. The ministry is a fucking joke, he muttered.
Why do you think I do not wish to run it? Kingsley asked dryly.
Well, I wish you'd stay, Harry said. At least you're honest, and will try to do right for everyone.
Honest? Me? Kingsley said in amusement, arching his brows. The one who has a history of covering up for Azkaban escapees. The one currently being corrupted by the Savior.
I'm not corrupting you, Harry protested, amongst the others' laughter.
And to think, it has not even been necessary for Lucius to give you lessons, Severus said smoothly.
Harry opened his mouth to argue that accusation, but wasn't sure how to.
You, my dear Harry, are a master manipulator, Draco drawled, whether you are willing to admit it or not.
I'm only trying to do the right thing, Harry said stubbornly.
It is that fact that allows you to get away with a great deal more than the average person, Remus pointed out mildly.
That and the fact that he killed off the Dark Lord, Draco added, smirking.
Corrupt away, Harry, Tonks said cheerfully. You are surely one of the few to corrupt with the goal of doing the right thing, rather than for personal gain.
Harry squirmed uncomfortably.
I'm not really being completely unselfish, he admitted.
Harry, what do you wish to receive as reward for freeing us from you-know-who?
Kingsley asked abruptly.
Harry looked at him in alarm, having sudden visions of medals and acceptance speeches.
I don't want anything, he said.
Just your boyfriend and your family, Kingsley suggested.
Well, yeah, Harry said softly.
As minister, I'm not against doing the right thing and working to get them the pardon they deserve, Kingsley said quietly. It is not a mutually exclusive task to work to give you what you really want. You have every right to ask for a great deal more than the right to live with your family, and that justice be served.
Harry bit at his lip, disturbed by how much power he seemed to hold over everyone. It was downright scary and nerve-wracking. It wasn't going to stop him from getting the pardon Severus and the Malfoys deserved, but it was still disturbing. He looked at Draco.
Aren't you scared I'll fuck this up somehow? Your entire future depends on this.
With you on my side? No, I'm not the least bit scared, Draco answered seriously.
Harry walked the ministry corridors, protected by Kingsley and Tonks on either side of him. He tried not to wince at all the noise.
If it wasn't today, you would have had to wait until Monday, Tonks said sympathetically.
Harry nodded. He didn't want to wait the weekend in a holding cell. He could handle a headache. The attention from all those who spotted him, though, was extremely alarming. He was reminded of his first visit to the Leaky Cauldron. That had been 10 years after Voldemort disappeared, and Harry had been a scrawny 11-year-old. Yet he'd been hailed as a hero, adults fawning over him. This was 100 times more surreal than that. Voldemort's defeat, and truly gone this time, was fresh in everyone's minds. They were all aware that Harry had won. It had not been a passive win, such as when he was an infant. Harry had actively conquered Voldemort this time. Everyone stopped in their tracks to watch him walk past, looks of awe on their faces. Females squealed when they caught sight of him. Many made an attempt to touch him. "Merlin, you'd think I was bloody royalty," Harry muttered.
"To them you are," Kingsley said.
"I'm just a 17-year-old with a headache who wants to go home and crawl into bed with his boyfriend," Harry said.
"You're going to be breaking hearts when that news gets out," Tonks said knowingly, a grin threatening to split her face.
"My dear cousin is going to be perfecting his hexes, if I'm not mistaken."
Harry groaned. "Why do I find myself suddenly glad that Crabbe and Goyle have appointed themselves as my personal bodyguards?"
He frowned as he was ushered into one of the lifts, realizing he hadn't even asked where they were. All he knew was that everyone was all right, meaning everyone had survived the battle. He pushed the thoughts aside. He could only handle so much at one time. As they stepped out of the lift, Harry shuddered. He'd not been down this corridor since Sirius's death. Best not think of that, either.
"All right?" Tonks asked.
Harry swallowed heavily, nodding.
"The others are already in there," Kingsley said.
Harry stared at him blankly.
"Remus, Minerva, the Weasleys, anyone who can and will testify,"
Kingsley said pointedly. "Although, I don't see why they're necessary, what with Harry here," Tonks said.
Kingsley stopped him. "Harry, it will be necessary for you to explain, as much as possible, everything that has happened," he said. "You are aware of this, aren't you?"
Harry shrugged. "Yeah," he admitted. "There's just a few things I can't touch on."
"I don't think it will matter," Kingsley said dryly. "You will have them all hanging on your every word."